Fred, you ready to turn the show on?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it.
Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306.
It's 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, Philadelphia and the rest of the world now. You're listening to Clean and Sober Radio on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia, and I say around the world because we've been getting responses through our podcast and through our website, and I know that, you know, our regulars on here, John Templeton, David Sussman, know all about that. In fact, they can't even walk down the street with people not recognizing them, you know. They both have a face for radio.
Yeah,
for sure.
They want my E autograph.
That's it.
They want.
Yeah. So you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio, and what we do is we talk about all aspects of addiction and recovery. And, you know, we need to let everybody know that there is a way out of the horrors of addiction. But there's no drive-thrus. There is no – they don't deliver recovery. You have to want to go out and get it. And we are fortunate around the Philadelphia area to have a lot of great resources. And I'm just going to mention a couple of our underwriters, the Malvern Institute, Rehab After Work and After School, and Humble Beginnings. And these guys provide very, very good services. So a lot's going to happen today on the show, so I'm just going to run through some really quick stuff. The Pennsylvania Addiction Hotline is 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. If you or somebody you know or love needs treatment, call this number. Trained people will be answering the phones. It's sponsored by the state of Pennsylvania. The last thing I want to talk about is Recovery Month is this month. It's September across the country, and the kickoff is Wednesday, September the 6th, in the Capitol building, the Rotunda in Harrisburg at 10 o'clock, and I'm emceeing the event. The governor will be there, and a lot of really cool guests will be at this event. It'll only last about 2 hours, but it's something they'll really see. They expect about 1,000 people. So plan to attend Pennsylvania's kickoff of National Recovery Month, Wednesday, September the 6th, in the Capitol Building in Harrisburg. And that's it. Okay, so let's get right down to the show. Our first guest, and we've wanted to have him on for a very, very long time, is P.J. Shevlin. P.J., welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. Good to be here.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't also say David Sussman, John Templeton, welcome back, you guys. You guys are one of the staples of this show.
Regulars, yes.
You've always
regulars
a pleasure,
now.
Gary.
Absolutely. So, PJ, let's talk. Let's open up and let's talk about the Shevlin Foundation and what does that do. And it's out in Chester County. Is that correct?
It's actually in Chester City, Chester, PA.
Is that Chester County?
It's Delaware County.
It is. Okay.
It is.
Tell us about your foundation, what you do.
For sure. So the Peggy and Paul Shevlin Family Foundation, Peggy and Paul are my parents.
Yes.
They, at the end of 2015, decided to start a 501c3 nonprofit that would benefit people that were looking to get into recovery or needed help to find recovery, active addicts and alcoholics that wanted access to resources to get long-term recovery.
What was the draw for them to set up a foundation?
Well, one of the draws was me. I've been struggled with alcohol and drug addiction really my whole life. Had a period of long-term sobriety from 89 to 2003. Relapsed, stayed out another 10 years, and then got sober. I have 32 months sober now.
Very good.
I also have two brothers that are in recovery. So I have there's six brothers and sisters all together. I have two that are in recovery and me. So there's three of us. So
you're telling me you have 11 siblings?
No, I have four brothers and two sisters.
Oh, okay.
So there's seven.
Okay.
There's seven of us.
Okay. That's still a lot.
If my parents are listening to this right now, they're saying, "No, Gary, please, no, Gary." So that inspired them to start the foundation, to help people that really are in a position to not be able to help themselves at that point. But like you said in the beginning of the show, you know, the interesting thing about addiction is you do have to want it. You do have to go looking for it. It's difficult to just go out on the street and start picking people up and saying, "Let us help you." If you don't want help, it's tough. It's tough to give it. So it's been a very interesting journey, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Right. Excellent. That's such a great thing that your folks set up. I mean, you know, a lot of people talk, but you guys are actually doing it, and you're actually helping people. That's just absolutely incredible. Let me ask you about your background. What was your – where'd you come from?
I grew up in Delaware County, Drexel Hill. Was a Catholic school kid. Lived in Drexel Hill most of my life. My parents moved out to Broomall in 1980. I was 16 years old.
Okay.
I got involved with some kids, the cool kids, at an early age, and started smoking pot and drinking. And I instantly liked it a little bit more than everybody else.
I know about that.
We can't relate to that.
Things kind of progressed.
Yeah.
Life got unmanageable pretty quick.
Yep.
Somehow I made it through college. I think I was too broke to really have my active addiction take over then, but somehow I managed to get out of there. And when I got out of school, it really kind of took off and life got unmanageable. And I found my way into treatment and was able to get some recovery and stay. Actually went to the Harwood House here in Delaware County.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Did a little time also down at George W. Hill. That helped me
out a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And met a girl in AA, stayed sober for 14 years, had three kids, did some really good things with my life. And, when all those good things started happening, I figured, well, geez, I can't be an alcoholic anymore. I mean, there's too many good things happening in my life. So I ended up drinking and relapsing again, and the whole thing kind of replayed itself. And
so the foundation does actually get people into treatment?
Well, we do. It's interesting what's happened is because really, like, tangibly, what we're doing for people is, I'll give you an example. I got a phone call today from a treatment center, and there's a young guy there that is getting out in a week, and he doesn't want to go home. The home situation is not good for him for whatever reason, and you guys can imagine there's a bunch of reasons why. So he wants to go into a recovery house. The treatment center has an approved list of recovery houses. The problem is he doesn't have any money, and his parents don't have any money, and there's really – he has no resources. The counselor likes him. He's very willing. What's cool is if a counselor's with a guy for 2 or 3 weeks – he can really get to know that guy better than I could with a phone call or something.
You're right. He's like a perfect candidate for your.
It's perfect candidate. So he the counselor calls, introduces us to the guy. They already have decided what recovery house will work for him, and we give him a scholarship to get in there and give him a little bit of time to get settled and get a job. Sometimes it's 2 weeks, sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's longer. Depending on what the situation is.
Great. Yeah. That's good.
So where does your funding come from?
It comes from, my parents at the beginning, and what we do now is we fundraise, private contributors. We do some Facebook stuff.
How do they reach you? Is a website?
We do. www.shevlinfamilyfoundation.org. So that's SHEV as in Victor, LIN, foundation.org, shevlinfamilyfoundation.org. You can check our website out. There's a donation button there.
Great.
We also have a Facebook page, the Peggy and Paul Shevlin Family Foundation on Facebook, and that will direct you exactly where you need to get directed. You can also call 215-880-9000. 215-880-9970.
Give that number again, will you?
215-880-9970. That phone is on 24/7.
All right.
And we'll answer it and help in any way that we can.
Great. Okay. What we're going to do now, you'll stay with us for the rest of the
hour. I can't leave these two guys.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Julia Negron. So don't go away.
This is Dr. Joan, and you listen to Clean and Sober Radio, 860 AM.
Hi, this is Dion, the Wanderer. Listen to Clean and Sober Radio. You might hear something that'll change your life. Yo!
Hi, this is Bobby Rydell, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, this is Lee Rocker from the Stray Cats, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio. Rock on, man.
Knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby. Can I have some more? Ooh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man.
And we're back, Clean and Sober Radio on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia. And we are very, very fortunate and pleased to have Julia Negron join us right now. Julia, on the phone?
I'm on my phone. Can you hear me?
I certainly can. How are you?
I'm okay. And, you know, I apologize. Wasn't I supposed to be on last July 7th or something
Listen, first of all, no apologies. And we, you know, we felt terrible. And we, you know, I think I did mention it that day that we, all of us here, send our condolences to you and your family.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm raising my 8-year-old grandson now. He lives here. And, it just was weird. I was due to be on your show at a half an hour before I got this call, and that meant I had to tell my son and grandson, and it was just, whoa, what a trip. But, you know, it's yesterday was an International Overdose Awareness Day,
yeah.
And we held a march and vigil and actually free naloxone giveaway here in Florida, so I'm very feeling upbeat about that. You know, we've saved some lives, maybe.
And Julia, we're all aware about the yesterday's events. You were personally saved from an overdose, weren't you?
Oh, back in the day, a couple of times. I got sober in 1985, so it was before. We know it was before that, but my memory on exactly what year or day or whatever. Is dim, but you've had my ex-husband on before.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
I want to get the pink elephant out of the room because, you know, we advertised, you know, on our pot, on everything that you were coming on, and people go, oh, Chuck Negron's wife. And yes, he's a very famous guy, but you were also married to the drummer of the Doors, weren't you?
Oh, right. My first husband is John Densmore.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, before Chuck. But it's a little bit of a rock and roll soap opera. I left John to go be with Barry Oakley of the Allman Brothers Band, and he died in a motorcycle accident when I was 6 months pregnant. So my oldest son is actually the son of Barry Oakley, and my younger son is the son of Chuck.
Wow.
So wow. I named both sons after their dads. It's less confusing that way, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. So you have a history, obviously, it's a rock and roll history. I also grew up in the music business in Philadelphia, late 60s and early 70s. So
Love it, you know.
Of
Philadelphia. You know, I'm sure when Chuck was on, he went on and on about that because that was, like, on our record player, on our turntable.
What was?
You know, Philadelphia music. You
sure,
know,
the sound of Philadelphia, Gamble and Huff, and all that stuff.
All the soul groups. Sorry, I'm getting a call waiting. I should have blocked that.
Okay. We were wondering if it was us or if it was you.
We were really an R&B household, you know, and the Philadelphia sound was a huge deal in our house. I'm sure Chuck must have gone on and on about that.
Well, he certainly did. He certainly did. So I was on the distributor end, and most of the music was R&B, Sound of Philadelphia. And we also had hit records out of our place. So I sort of know from a different part of the music industry how incredibly insane it could be. It can be if you have a certain personality.
I know a little bit about insane. I mean, before I got involved with John and Mary John, I worked in record companies. I worked at Liberty Records in Los Angeles and Hollywood, and so I'm aware of all the kind of business and distributor things and stuff like that. But whoa, that's a hard deal. Don't like the business end of music.
No, and it's for personalities like the ones that. You know, I'm sitting here with all my buddies, PJ, David, and John, you know, with our addictive personalities, and mine in particular, that record business really gave me highs and lows in every which way you can think of. I'm sure it did the same for you.
Yeah. You know, someone asked me about that the other day, like, how did you get involved in so many drugs and stuff like that? And I can't really blame it on rock and roll, although it was a different culture. You know, how we lived and how we traveled and the kind of parties we had. And, you know, someone was always putting out lines of coke and stuff. I mean, it really was a different world. But it isn't like I wasn't involved in drugs before that all happened,
right,
you know.
Right.
So I don't want to ever blame it on rock and roll.
Well, you know, it probably would have been different if you worked in a shoe store. You know what
I
mean?
I don't know.
You know?
And you know what? Chances of me ever being like normal and working in a shoe store were like slim and none. That was not going to happen.
Tell us about. I want to know all about your foundation that you started.
Well, this is kind of a new thing. Yeah, I moved from California to Florida, and nobody can understand why I did that. But it was kind of like at the urging of the IRS that I keep my monthly payments more current. It's cheaper here than living in Los Angeles. So I'm now a Floridian. I got here about 4 years ago, you know, and I'd been doing a lot of advocacy work and activism in Los Angeles.
Right.
And involved in the Los Angeles Overdose Task Force and things like that. So when I got here, I started reaching out to people like, what's up around here? And it just evolved, you know, so I kind of co-founded this. And I say co because if I hadn't run into these other moms and people, I don't know that would have happened. But we founded an organization called Suncoast Harm Reduction Project.
Right.
And it's the first harm reduction project in Florida, which is kind of, we're bringing the idea of harm reduction to Florida. Now, Florida is kind of, in my opinion, it's like living in the 80s again. They're way behind the curve on science. They're way behind the curve on recovery and multiple pathways of recovery. They're way behind the curve on harm reduction. So we're trying to reach out and educate people and engage people, you know, and get them to look at it a different way because, you know, it's changed, you know, from the day I walked into the rooms. You know, things have changed. We've learned to be less judgmental and be more, you know, a bigger tent about our recovery.
Julia, let me ask you a question. I've been thinking about this for the last week for some reason. When I got sober in 82, okay, and during that, you know, the next 20 years or whatever it was, people would say they're sober, and that was the end of the story. Now I'm hearing a lot of, yeah, I'm sober, but you know what? I still smoke marijuana or I still drink a little bit. What's going on?
I don't know, but God bless them. You know, it's like I learned to stop being the freaking sobriety police a long time ago. You know, if someone's in recovery, if they say they are, you know, who am I to tell them different? You know, if their life is working, you know, it's all about, are you better? Is your life working? You know, when you go in and look at some of the definitions of recovery, they've gotten pretty broad, and I'm okay with that. Because there's, you know, think about it. If there's 25 million people supposedly in recovery out there in this country, and you know what, a portion of that, maybe a fourth of that, identify as being in a program or program, you know, then the rest of those people are out there living like in some kind of recovery that's working for them.
Yeah.
And you know, so
I, listen,
you know, maybe we're not the only game in town. And I think we should be, I just think we should be a broad tent, that we should be welcoming to everybody.
Well, you know,
who's making their life better.
I made that statement. I do agree with you. Listen, I know there's not one way, because I know people that I used to see in meetings who even don't go to meetings now are living a very productive and fruitful life, okay? But for me, I'm not judging anybody. I need to be part of 12-step program for as much as I want or for as little as I want. And I know when it works for me and when it doesn't, you know?
Well, you know, big quotes around the for me, because that's, you know, I'm the same way. I've been, quote, sober. I hate to use the words clean these days because it's kind of stigmatizing, we've come to find. But, you know, I've been clean and sober since 85.
Right.
And I don't drink or any of that or smoke weed, but I never liked it so much before, so who cares? But, you know, I make no judgment on people that are on methadone or Suboxone.
Correct.
Or people that smoke weed and have made their still and make their life better. You know, I support research into finding out if weed is a good exit drug for our opioid epidemic. We're losing too many people, and you know that Joe Schrank's trying that out there in L.A. So, I mean, let's see how that goes. Maybe that'll help. Who knows till we try. But I mean, I just, the for me is a real big part,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So, you know, what works for you at the end of the day is the most important thing.
That's exactly right.
Someone else telling you that if you're not doing it the way I think you ought to, you know, then you're, you know, hit the curb. But I mean, you know, that's something I learned going to Al-Anon for a lot of years. It's like I used to, like, you know, sweat bullets and kvetch over my son. My younger son, who, you know, struggled 22 years in and out of probably 20 treatment centers and 2 prison terms and all that crazy stuff, you know, and I used to hear over and over, his recovery may never look like yours or like you want it to, but it's his recovery. And I heard that in Al-Anon, you know, and I've held on to that because that's the truth. You know, and I mean, I hear it over and over again. I work with Faces and Voices of Recovery and Facing Addiction and all the big organizations. And we really, when we sit in conferences, we always say, you know, you're in recovery if you say you are. You know, I'm not in intake, doing intake, diagnosing you and putting you in a chart anymore. So, I mean, I'm reaching out and trying to engage people.
I went through
I worked decades in treatment, and I understand all about the criteria and stuff like that when we admit someone into treatment. And that's a different thing. That's medical treatment, you know. But treatment and your program, your life program, whatever it may be, those are two different things.
I'm in total agreement with you. And you know what? Nobody knows the answer. And you know what? Nobody knows the answer on the individual till the end of their life comes, I guess. Was it successful? Was it not? Whatever. But you know what the good thing is? People need to have their own program, and your program doesn't affect mine, no matter what it is, you know?
Right.
So
that's what I meant. You know, I get, like, really turned off by the sobriety police, you know, the people that are, like, busy taking everybody else's inventory.
You know what? I'll tell you something. You know what I noticed, and, I'm speaking to everybody in the room also. I noticed
speaking in a lot of program speak that I usually don't do too much anymore, but I mean, these are truisms, no matter how much time you spend in the rooms or not, you know, that you have no business taking everybody else's inventory.
Yeah, I just want to say, Julia, it's good that, like, Gary and you, people like you, give back to the community. Besides that, helping yourself and staying clean and sober, it's good that you you reach out to other people. Gary does his show. He does other things. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. You know, what he said you had a you had some kind of program going on now.
When I moved to Florida, I hit, you know, we pretty much hit the ground running doing this harm reduction stuff. And priority number one, because of the epidemic of opioid overdose deaths, was like getting people educated in overdose prevention and distributing naloxone, getting some naloxone out there to the people in the street. You know, regard with no judgment what they're doing or how they're using or anything. This is just let me teach you how to not harm yourself and save your life.
Yeah, as bad as it was.
No recovery.
I'm sorry.
You're dead.
Yeah, like 15 years ago when I came around, that was the last time I came around, thank God, hopefully, it wasn't as bad as it is today. I can't believe what's going on out there with I mean, I was using heroin. I mean, if I'd be dead today if I was still doing that. I mean, obviously with what they're doing to it. But the epidemic was so bad now. I'd never seen anything like it.
Well, I was too, and my life was saved, like I said, a couple of times. You know, and I don't know, you know, I've been out of it long enough to say I have no concept, kind of. I can't wrap my brain around how strong it must be out there right now. But, I mean, it's obviously some really strong stuff out there, and a lot of fentanyl, and a lot of, where I'm in Florida, a lot of car fentanyl. And it's not like we didn't have fentanyl and all that in the 70s. We had tons of it. But maybe it's a different population of people that have started using it or something.
Yeah, hi, Joy. This is John, one of Gary's friends.
Hi.
I have two sons who are chronic. They're chronic heroin users, and they're both on maintenance programs. And one's on, I guess, what is it, Suboxone's one, and methadone's the other. You know, some people say, well, why do you let those two do that? You know, you should be telling them to get off. I'd rather have treatments
Absolutely.
Than out there buying street drugs, because you just don't know. I had a 31-year-old nephew die from an overdose of heroin. And, you know, it was a tragedy in our family. And he had been clean off and on for many, many years. But, yeah, I would rather see you on a maintenance program prescribed and, you know, in the care of a doctor or a counselor so that you don't have to go out there and you know, take the risk of using the street drugs. And then we'll work on the other things later on as you get, you know, as you stay clean for a while.
Right. But you know what, people out there, you know, I hear some of my own people, my fellows, shall we say, you know, and they're like science, they're like climate change deniers. They're like science deniers. It's like, you know, the science is out there that this works for a huge majority of people, you know, that it does well and they succeed and their life becomes better and infections are lessened and crime is lessened and danger is lessened. You know, I am 100% in favor of methadone clinics and buprenorphine use. And all of that, you know, because, you know, it's like being a diabetic. You might be one of those people where the doctor says, go home and change your diet and you'll be cool. But you might be one of those people where the doctor says, you know what, no matter what you do, you've got to take insulin as well. You know, and it's kind of like that with addictive illness, too, because being on medication-assisted treatment, and this is like I can back this up with a ton of research, gives your brain not only time to heal, but takes you out of that environment that is so hard to get away from. You know, I've seen it over and over and over again, you know, and the problem is that the people that are successful with it, you're not going to see. You only see the people that are having trouble with it, because I hear all these people tell these little stories like, oh, I knew a guy and he did this and he did that and it didn't work for him. It's like, okay, but the people it's working for, you're probably never going to see because they're out living their lives, you know, and taking care of business. And in fact, I brought that up to Michael Botticelli, the drug czar, when I was in Washington last, when he was still the drug czar. It's like we had that big concert with all these people coming on stage talking about their recovery. Where was your person that was on methadone maintenance and doing well in recovery? You know, why are you leaving those people out? Why are we still stigmatizing our own people because they need medication?
Yeah, I was.
I'm sorry. Don't get me on a rant.
I was strictly an alcoholic, and I, you know, my substitute was Jolly Ranchers and Dr. Pepper. I mean, that got me through, you know, because when I got the urge, and they suggest that when you're, you know, an alcoholic, alcohol is a complex sugar, you're going to want to crave that, and you know, I wasn't a heroin. I never used heroin. You know, I was more of a daily pot smoker. But, you know, I had to have sugar in my system until I got over the hump and I realized that, you know, well, the sugar's not working out really well either. But I had some clean time. I had, you know, some sober time before I said, I better cut back on the Jolly Ranchers and the you know, soda.
Eventually, right?
Yeah.
Julia, first of all, we want to thank you. We're coming up to the half an hour, and we have to roll on. We really appreciate you taking time to come on with us. And I was wondering if I can get back to you maybe next month. Would you come back on again?
Sure, because I'd like to keep talking about this. I don't like that we eat our young. You know, we need to like be engaging people into recovery and whatever pathway that takes for them, you know. So, yeah, for sure have me back on.
We will definitely do that. You'll hear from me mid-part of this month. And, Julia, thank you so very much for taking time out to be on Clean and Sober Radio.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Keep doing your stuff.
I will.
Thanks, Julia.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Eddie?
Yeah, Gary, how are you?
How are you doing? Eddie Money is with us right
Eddie
now,
Money.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Eddie Money.
The greatest. Eddie, listen, you're sitting around with me, obviously, Gary Hendler, my buddies, PJ, David, and John. And I know you're in a in between airplanes right now, and it's really
Gary,
hectic.
They threw me off one plane, now they're throwing me on another plane.
Okay.
And I got to say, I'm up at the Minneapolis airport. Do you realize that if you go to the H gates and you go to the A gates, it's a 3-mile walk. I mean, it's incredible.
You got to be kidding. Well,
I'm glad I'm sober, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, absolutely. So, Eddie, talk with us until you can't speak with us anymore. And I just want to mention real quick before, and I'll mention again, you're going to be at the Wildwood Convention Hall next Friday night from 5 to 10 with Fog Hat.
That's September 8th. It's on a Friday night.
September 8th. Exactly.
I got to tell you, Gary, yeah. I got to find some wood to knock on because the critics have been raving about the show. I mean, I've been sober now for 9 years. We opened up the show with 2 tickets to Paradise. Then I said to everybody, how would you like to be a rock and roll star? We do rock and roll star. Then I said, I want to do a song for all my ladies from the 80s. And we do Endless Nights. Then we do Walk on Water. Then we do No Control. We got Give Me Some Water. We got Take Me Home Tonight. We got Think I'm in Love. We got Shaken. 2 tickets to Paradise. The show's going to be fantastic.
Listen, I got so much. I have so much info on you, but I'm just nervous we're going to run out of time. I want to real quickly, you know, I just found out you were a cop before you got into the music business, weren't you?
Well, you know, I was in a rock and roll band in high school.
Yeah.
And then when everybody in high school, it was during the war in Vietnam, and my brother was actually in the Marine Corps. And he was stuck over there in the DMZ zone up on Monkey Mountain. And, you know, I wasn't really a big fan of going to Vietnam, but I wanted to. My dad was a cop.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what, if I was going to go on the police department, I'd be helping people.
Right.
So I went on the police department for a couple of years. But I didn't want to, I mean, I couldn't really see myself in uniform, in a police uniform with short hair for 20 years of my life. So I quit the police department, moved out to California. And then in about 1975... I got a record deal with Columbia Records and with Bill Graham, Rock Impresario and Bill Graham.
Yeah, sure.
The next thing I know, it's on Saturday Night Live, and I was doing all these great shows, and my career really took off.
Well, I got to tell you something. When you were at the height, you know, back then, because I know you're doing it again, when you were in the height of your career, I was in the depths of my Quaalude addiction. So, you know, when I think about myself sitting around with my buddy here, David, you know, getting all wasted on Quaaludes.
Yeah.
I hear your music in my head. You know that?
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
That might not be a good thing.
No, it was a good thing. It was a good thing. You know.
Quaaludes. I remember people taking Quaaludes back in the day.
Yeah.
I remember opening up a car door, thinking I wasn't even stoned on the things, and the car door hit me in the head, and I wound up getting 3 stitches in my right above my eye. That's how crazy those crazy Quaaludes were.
Yeah. Oh, I know. God. I know.
What
Eddie,
a horrible drug that was.
So, Eddie, let me ask something. So, this, you know, the 70s and the 80s, you were doing your thing. What happened? Where were you in the 90s?
In the 90s, I was, you know, I was married.
Yeah.
I was in a spiritual program, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I married my wife, and I had 5 kids, and I didn't want my kids growing up thinking their father was a drug addict or an alcoholic. So, I mean, I changed everything around. I started, you know, I quit snorting blow. I quit drinking.
Yeah.
I started going to early morning meetings. I was going to meetings at 5:45 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got a really good sponsor. And then I went back out again. I mean, I had David Crosby sponsoring me. And his wife called me up and said, David doesn't want to sponsor you anymore. He doesn't think you need a sponsor. He thinks you need an exorcist.
Great.
But I finally got it together, and I'm very happy to say that I don't drink, I don't use anymore. I've got like 9 years, and due
That's
to
great.
The power of the program, I've actually, you know, I quit smoking cigarettes. I haven't had any cigarettes in 4 years, and my range has improved. I'm singing really well,
right?
And things have been really good to me. I mean, if you think about alcohol and drugs. It's cunning and it's cunning and it's baffling.
Yes, yes, it is.
Buddies of mine, I got buddies of mine that, you know, never got it back together again. You know,
yeah.
I get Jimmy Jameson, the lead singer from Survivor, really good friend of mine, and he just he went back out and he had a heart attack and died. And I loved the guy to death. And I had a lot of friends that just didn't make it back. You know,
I'm very lucky. Eddie, this is David, a friend of Gary's. I'm curious, being a celebrity, do you have, like, friends who have kids who are on drugs, ask you to help them? Do you give back to the community? Do you help other people?
I take a lot of phone calls, and, you know, I take care of a lot of – I got to tell you, I take care of a lot of babies out there.
That's great to hear. It really is.
I mean, I still go to meetings. I go to my gratitude meetings, and when somebody needs help, I'm there for them. I met a guy yesterday who was in a program. He drove me from Sun Valley, from the airport into Sun Valley, and we were together in the car for about 45 minutes, so we basically had a meeting between just the two of us. You know, I was staying sober, how he's staying sober. He's telling me, he said, if I ever went back out again, I'd have a slip so quick. I said, you know what? I hear you knocking, man. Just, you know, keep it on a level, keep it on a level plane. And I tell you, God's gift to me, sobriety, I get so much more respect from my relatives, from my wife and my kids.
Yeah,
I don't have to worry
about
driving drunk anymore.
You know, Eddie, it's right. It's that respect that we didn't have that we gained in sobriety, which is really – and it takes a while. You know, once you get sober, that doesn't wipe everything out, as you know. So that is a big – that is a really big part. I wanted to know, when was the defining moment when you decided to get clean and sober the last time?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I had a really bad drug overdose back in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fentanyl, that's the drug that actually Prince OD'd on. He OD'd on fentanyl.
Yeah.
It's called fentanyl.
Yeah.
And I was drinking a lot of vodka, and I thought I was snorting blow, and it turned out to be this fentanyl. And I went into a semi-catatonic state, and my nerves didn't twitch. So when my nerves didn't twitch, I actually killed the sciatic nerve in my left leg, which is the longest nerve in your body, and I blew out my kidneys. So I wound up in the hospital, thanks to the grace of God. You know, I got better and everything else like that. But then I had a doctor tell me, you know what? You're not better. You're going to wind up going out and copping a year later. You're going to be someplace copping. And true enough, I was, you know, on the road, I think, I'm out in South Dakota or something, a year later with a cane, and I was out there waiting for somebody to cop some blow. And then I said to myself, wait a minute, this is not happening to me. And I finally saw the light, and I said, you know what? I'm done. And then, you know, one thing about AA is if, you know, you got to be honest with yourself. You go, like, you can lie to a lot of people, but you can't lie to yourself.
Yeah.
So I get up and I look at myself in the mirror, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to drink today. I'm not going to use today. And it just gives me the power that I need to, you know, to get to life. You know, it's amazing. And I think that sobriety to me, my drug is sobriety. I mean, I have such a good time getting out there and performing and hanging out, and everybody's out there drinking and having a good time. I'm, you know, good for them.
You know, so now
I know I'm an alcoholic.
You know,
I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink. I'm a dope addict. I can't use drugs.
You know, the difference now, Eddie, is we're in control, not the drug or the booze.
Yes, exactly. And I love it too. You got to be, you know, we're in control is right. You know, I mean, people not about the big book. I mean, I think that the program is the greatest thing in the world, and it's helped so many people out. It's I don't know. I mean, I've been to the house in Dayton, Ohio, where, you know, with Dr. Bob and, you know, right where they had their first meeting.
Yeah.
And it was a spiritual experience for me, too.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
Very emotional. Eddie, do you find it difficult to be on the road like you are now with a lot of other artists? Are they using now, or has that pretty much calmed down?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you the truth. Everybody is still... You know, not everybody's clean and sober, but then again, there's a lot of people out there that aren't alcoholics.
Right.
They're not dope addicts. They don't have the bug like, you know, I had. You know, both my parents had parents that were alcoholics. So my mother and father didn't drink. My father was from World War II. My mother, you know, but they never drank and they never smoked. But, you know, the kids turned around. I mean, right now, my daughter last night, she got wasted in Sun Valley, and we had to leave her there. Mm-hmm. And I'm so mad at her right now, but, you know, I got to take care of myself. I mean, eventually she's going to see the light. She was snorting methadrine for like 3 or 4 years. years, and then she cleaned herself up. But now she thinks she can go out there and have a couple of cocktails. But you know what? When you have three or four cocktails, especially if you're drinking like whiskey, you can't get up in the morning. I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to take a flight at seven o'clock. I had to take three flights to go to Warsaw.
And
I'm in Warsaw, Wisconsin tonight. And my daughter, she didn't make any of the flights, and I'm very, very mad at her.
Listen, I've been through it.
I'm so disgusted with her right now.
Yeah.
I don't even want to add her on the road right now.
Yeah, I know. Well, hopefully she'll see the light. I mean, we can't control that.
If she doesn't see the lights, you know what? I bought her a car.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something. You know, people they listen to you or other famous people and think, oh, these people got the life, man. They got no problems. We all deal with the same issues no matter who we are, shoemakers or rock stars. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, I used to make $1,000 a minute. I'd do a show in St. Louis with Fleetwood Mac and take a Learjet to go to Kansas City to do a show with Steve Miller. I mean, I was making $1,000 a minute, but it doesn't make any difference. Eventually, drugs and alcohol is going to come back and it's going to fight.
That's right.
The only thing that really saved my life was, you know, AA. Tell you the truth, you know, I mean, if I went out and had a drink right now, I'd have to start all over again. And that means me starting all over is getting, you know, my court card signed by the judge.
Right.
Putting all the chairs away. It means making the coffee. It means sharing with everybody. I don't want to. I'm done being a newcomer. My newcomer days are over, man. I'm never going to go back.
That's right.
Never.
I totally agree with that. You know, never want to go back to that at all. And you know what? You have the power to control that also. We all do.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's a sneaky something about alcohol and drugs, man. It's got a sneaky way of turning around and, you know, thinking you could go back out and use again like regular people.
We can't.
I'm not a regular person, you know.
Alcoholism
is. I think alcoholism is actually hereditary.
Eddie, this is,
you know,
this is John. This is.
Drank and,
Yeah, Eddie.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah. This is. Yeah. I'm a friend of Gary. I've known Gary. How long have we known each other? 50 some years.
That's a long
and,
time.
And you know what? I like the analogy. See, I always have this analogy of, you remember the movie Cool Hand Luke?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So Paul Newman's going to fight. Was this George Kennedy? And just remember that scene, how they, you know, George. You know, Luke's this little guy. George Kennedy looks like the size of the building. Yeah, even
down,
your disease, right. Even your disease eventually tells you, look, stay down. You're never going to beat me. You're just never going to beat me. And we keep getting up and we keep thinking, you know, we keep thinking we're going to do that. You were talking about your daughter. I had a 31-year-old nephew who was a drug addict. He was a heroin user. But he would go and he would drink. And I would tell him, say, Josh, why are you drinking? Well, my problem was alcohol. My problem was drugs. I said, no, your problem is everything. Because it's going to lead you back to the drugs. And guess what? He's no longer with us because he just wouldn't listen.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. He wouldn't listen.
Listen,
I'm sorry to hear that.
We can't.
Well, I've lost some very, very close friends. I mean, super close friends from using.
Yeah, I have two sons. And every time the phone rings and I don't know who it is, I'm afraid – one of my two sons, it's going to be that bad phone call.
Yeah.
My kids, I don't let my kids go out and hang out that much. I mean, I got a 31-year-old, a 28-year-old, a 26-year-old, a 23-year-old. I mean, I got five kids. Now Jessica's drinking again, but I don't let them. It's not like I don't let them, but I just make sure that they steer clear of people that use. I mean, I got some rich friends of mine that I've got a lot more money than me, and they got sons and daughters that are out like ripping off houses and things like that. And these are respectable people that I run into church, and they're so ashamed of their children. But there's a lot of people that can't conquer the disease. I mean, I got friends of mine whose sons are like, I got a friend of mine whose son was just got caught ripping off a bunch of Daridons out of a house, and this guy makes over like $250,000 a year. And
his son's
a junkie.
Eddie, you know it doesn't matter. It hits every socioeconomic class, every race, every religion. You know, we're just lucky. We're lucky, aren't we? All of us here sitting at this table are very lucky.
I feel very fortunate right now that I did not use last night, and I feel very fortunate that I'm not going to use tonight, and I'm not going to use tomorrow. To
right.
me, that's a gift from God. For the, due to the grace of God and a rigorous and honest program, I'm on my feet. I'm doing good. I'm proud of it. Of course, I'd like to lose 10 pounds, but who wouldn't?
All right, we'll work on that next. Eddie, listen, we're up against the clock, but I just want to say this. I want everybody to know, all our listeners, that you're going to be at the Wildwood Convention Center on the beach, actually, a week from tonight. That's September the 8th.
Tell me to come down and do some shaking with the money, man. I got two tickets, but I'm shaking everybody.
Well, we're going to do that, and I'm going to announce it again next Friday on the show right before, so people will be able to get down there after listening to the show. Eddie, can you give me a drop before you come off?
Sure, I'd love to, Gary.
And hold on a second, and I'll give you a call next week because a gang of us are going to come down. We're going to come down to the convention center and finally get to meet you.
You know what? Hey, I'm here to help. You know, man, anybody that's anybody that can help out, anybody that's clean and sober like me, it's just my kind of people.
Maybe we'll go to a meeting together next weekend, you know?
You know, there's a lot of people that drink out there and a lot of people that use out there. I mean, I've done shows where I've been selling T-shirts to people, and I've had people so drunk that I made sure that they got home.
Yeah.
I made sure that they walked behind the wheel and going to kill themselves or kill somebody else. I had a very good friend of mine who's he's in the program, and his daughter went out and got drunk one night, and she fell asleep behind the wheel and wound up killing three other individuals, also teenagers. Now, she did 4 years in the can that she just got out.
Wow.
How do you think that guy felt with his daughter, his only daughter, in jail for 4 years? I held his hand for 4 years. I comforted him. I went to see his daughter in jail. She's a very nice young lady, but she just made a mistake that anybody.
That's right.
You know that.
And obviously this disease affects the whole family.
And how would you like to go through life realizing when you're 18 years old that you killed three people your same age by getting drunk?
That's a life sentence. That's a life sentence as it is. To the individual, you know that?
No.
We've been any one of us.
Yeah.
All right, Eddie, look, I'm gonna drop off here. As soon as I stop, I'm gonna ask you to do a drop. You know how it's Eddie Money and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio. I'll give you a holler next week and we'll set something up so we get to see each other next Friday night after your show.
Gary, if you want to do another interview next week, you know, it's all part of my recovery.
Okay. That would be absolutely fabulous. Have a great.
Right, I'm gonna do the drop for Clean and Sober Radio. Should I bring your name up, Gary, or just say Clean and Sober?
No, you're hi. This is Eddie Money, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio. You know.
Here we go.
All right, Eddie. Have a great Labor Day weekend. I'm gonna drop off now, and the engineer.
We can do it while he's on the air.
Yeah, we're gonna do it now. Okay, Eddie, I'm gonna shut up now. If you would do the drop whenever you're ready, do it.
Okay, you're right. Right. Here we go.
Go.
Hey, gang, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money, and you know what? I listen to Clean and Sober Radio. Why? It's good for the blood.
Perfect. Thanks, Eddie. Eddie Money, everybody. Eddie Money. We'll talk to you next week, okay, Eddie? Have a great Labor Day.
This is Joe Lebowitz, founder and CEO of Humble Beginnings Recovery Centers. Did you know that 4 out of 5 heroin users' addictions stem from prescription misuse? Here at Humble Beginnings Recovery Centers, we treat people as more than a statistic. Humble Beginnings takes traditional drug and alcohol treatment out of hospital settings and into comfortable family home environment. Humble Beginnings also offers flexible lengths of stay for clients based on their individual needs. Call one of our admissions counselors today for a confidential phone assessment at 856-336-5806. That's 856-336-5806.
Addiction to alcohol and or drugs often has serious medical, occupational, educational, familial, psychological, and social consequences. Fortunately, there is a place you can go with the help you need and deserve. Rehab After Work, your substance abuse experts, are a licensed intensive outpatient drug and alcohol treatment provider, which has been helping addicted individuals find recovery for well over 2 decades. They can provide individualized treatment programs so that people can get the help they need on an outpatient basis and continue to work. work. Their staff of highly trained professionals include certified addictions counselors and licensed professional counselors with specialized training in the treatment of addiction. Their staff is dedicated to helping people that are struggling with chemical dependency. For confidential and immediate help, please call 1-800-238-HELP or visit their website, rehabafterwork.com. Again, that's 1-800-238-HELP or rehabafterwork.com. Start your path to recovery today. Rehab After Work is a member of Onward Behavioral Health.
Founded in 1948, the Malvern Institute continues to be a leader in the field of addiction treatment, now offering two inpatient treatment centers in Malvern and Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, as well as counseling centers throughout the Tri-County area. The Malvern Institute, a respected presence in the field. They provide an individual-based model of clinical care coupled with a 12-step approach and then followed by continued engagement and support for at least 90 days. Please call or visit to arrange help for yourself or a loved one. Call 866-455-8732. You are going to be able to speak to one of their trained professional admission staff members. Courtesy transportation can be provided as well. Most major insurances are also accepted. For more information, we urge you to visit them. You can go to their website, www.malverninstitute.com, and follow them on Facebook. The Malvern Institute, providing a foundation for lifelong recovery since 1948. Call 866-455-8732. That's 866-455-8732. Call today.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, this is Darryl Strawberry, and you listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hi, this is State Representative John Taylor, and I'm listening to Clean and Sober Radio on WWDB 860.
I've got two tickets to paradise. Won't you pack your bags for me tonight? I've got two tickets to paradise. I've got two tickets to paradise.
You know, we were really fortunate to get him. You know, he was on a plane to Wisconsin. Then he said he had to go. What was the other town? It sounded like it was in Russia. He was going.
It was touch and go for a while. It was
Wisconsin,
coming off a plane.
Somewhere in Wisconsin.
Going on another plane.
He was heading.
Yeah, heading to Wisconsin.
Finally. Warsaw, he said. I thought that was in Russia. Anyway, you know, great guest. We're going to have him back maybe next week for part of the show. He takes this real serious.
Yeah.
This is real serious to him. And
yeah. 10 years already.
Yeah. So everybody should go out to see that show next Friday night in Wildwood. It's also Bikers Weekend.
Nice.
A nice crowd.
Pack your bags and leave tonight.
That's right.
Bicyclers, right?
Yeah, you take your Schwinn. Your Schwinn.
I was going to take my Trek.
Your Schwinn. So look, you know, this is, you know, it's great about every. We fit everybody in today. I want to get back to the PJ's foundation, the Shevlin Foundation. PJ, tell us. So somebody calls you. What's the process to getting help? How does it work?
Well, we have a couple different examples. We'll have a lot of times we'll have a parent, a wife, a friend call who has somebody that needs treatment, has come to them for help, but doesn't have insurance.
Right.
Doesn't have a way to get into treatment, and these people don't really have any way to navigate. And you guys can probably relate to this. You know, where do you start? Who do you call? How do I get this person in there? So what we'll do is we'll put them in touch with people right away. We have people that are friends of the foundation, professional people in the industry, counselors, outreach people, and we'll get these guys in front of people as quickly as possible. We'll make calls on their behalf trying to increase the sense of urgency. In some cases, we'll go pick them up and bring them into crisis. Whatever it takes, because especially as we've been talking about today with the opiate epidemic going on too, you know, when you get one of those people that are ready and they want help, you got to do everything you can to get him help right then and there, because what happens in 2 or 3 hours when they're not feeling good and they want to go back out, or, well, wait a minute, I'll call you later. I'm going to go get myself healthy real quick, and it could be the last one. So that's a good example. And then the other example I gave earlier, just where we have people from different facilities that will call and have a person in inpatient that they want to help get into some sober living houses, recovery houses, transitional living, and they don't have the financial resources to do it, and we'll help them. We even had a girl call us from – a family call us from upstate New York last week, whose daughter is in a rehab in Florida, but her health insurance ran out. So we paid their COBRA bill for them, which kept them in treatment for an extra 30 days, which was pretty cool.
Why do you do this?
I'll tell you, I know this. I feel really, really grateful to have the opportunity to do it. Mm-hmm. I do it because my parents gave me the opportunity to do it. I do it because I'm clean and sober, and I feel pretty lucky, to be honest with you.
I just want to say one thing. I could have used that foundation help on several occasions. I mean, I know I had trouble. I was out of a rehab. I relapsed. I couldn't go back in. Nobody would take me. I didn't have the money.
Yep.
And something like your foundation would have really helped me. Now that it's helping other people, that's great, because I definitely could have used the help.
And you know what, David, what you said, you know, the insurance companies better wise up and understand. Yeah, maybe you won't get it the first time, the second time, the fifth time. It might take 10 times to finally get this thing.
Yep. Right. And it took me like 10 times at least.
Yeah,
too.
I've been to long-term rehabs 5-6 times.
Me too.
And short-term, maybe 10 times. And I'm going to tell you something. When I was in a rehab the first time, which was the same one you got clean at, many moons ago.
Which one was that, David? Give him a plug.
Strecker.
Okay.
Let me tell you. I just want to say that 28 days was standard. Double that, 56 days. Insurance company would pick up at least a month. Now, you're lucky to get 3 days. 3 days.
Well, guys, guess who's going to be paying for a lot of treatment very soon?
Who?
Pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
No, they are going to.
It seems like it.
Can I say one thing, Gary? I just wanted to say, and obviously this is an open invitation to you guys too. We have our first annual gala.
Great.
On Wednesday night, October 18th at 6:00 at Lanark Country Club in Havertown. We'd like you to come out.
I know that place well.
Celebrate recovery with us. Help us help others. We're looking forward to a really great night.
PJ, what's the date again on that?
It is Wednesday, October 18th.
You'll get us that information.
Yes,
I
will.
We can announce it.
Sure will.
I'm getting the evil eye here, and we got to start to wrap it up. Hey, guys, Labor Day weekend. It's one of these holidays. You got to be real careful, right?
That's right.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm going to be working all weekend, which is safe for me.
I'm going to try to take my two daughters, a 10 and 12 year old, up to a water park up in Bethlehem with a couple of their friends.
Great.
We're going to do that Monday. It's a really cool place.
And Monday's weather is going to be great, too.
I wanted to go today. Weather was bad. I wanted to go tomorrow. Weather was bad. I wanted to go Sunday. Yeah. Somebody had something else to do. But Monday, I think we're going to nail it.
PJ, what are you going to do
Monday?
I'm going to see a high school football game tonight, a fantasy football draft tomorrow, and I'm going to go see my son at Arcadia University on Sunday.
Right, and you're not gambling on any of those games?
None of it. Meetings, too, in between. Yeah. Meetings here and there.
What are you doing, Gary?
I'm going to Ventnor in about 20 minutes.
Oh, that sounds nice.
You know? So, listen, everybody out there, have a great Labor Day weekend. Be careful. Be responsible, clean, and sober.
Amen.
And we'll be back Sunday morning on 6:10 at 10 a.m., and we'll see you next week.
Sun that loves you brown, when the system tries to bring you